I'm Andy Borowitz, in today for Leonard Lope. Well, complaining is a favorite pastime for some people. The subway is delayed, traffic is terrible, the barista is rude, the weather is too humid, the blender you just broke the first time you just bought broke the first time you used it. Somebody read a line of copy wrong. My producers are complaining about that. The flight is delayed. I could go on and on and on. But it is possible to complain effectively to the right person in the right way in order to get results. Now, in this week's Please Explain, and that's that Please Explain music you're hearing, we'll find out how to complain. Todd Marks, Senior Projects Editor at Consumer Reports, and Guy Winch, Psychology Today blogger and author of The Squeaky Wheel, published by Walker & Company, and Emotional First Aid, published by Hudson Street Press, are going to explain the art of complaining effectively. And of course, we're inviting you, our listeners, to join the conversations. If you have a question, you can call us at 212-433-9692. And we really want to hear people who want advice about complaining, not complaining in and of itself, because we hear plenty of complaining around the office. We don't need more complaints. But we want your people seeking advice about how to complain more effectively. You can also leave a question on our show page at WNYC.org, and you can also write to us on Facebook or on Twitter at Leonard Lopate at Twitter. So, Guy, just for my information, what is the technical difference between complaining and whining, which is my specialty, or just griping and venting? What is there a real you're suggesting that there's actually some value to a well-orchestrated complaint.
That's correct. And I'm actually suggesting that there should be a difference between those things, but often there is not. And the difference that there should be is that when we complain, it should be something that is a useful tool that we use to achieve a certain end, to resolve something, to get restitution. When we whine or when we gripe, by definition, we're just venting. We're just letting off steam, but we're not really trying to get something done. Mm-hmm. And my concern is, my general concern and the one that made me write the book, is that today we are really doing the griping and the whining far more than we're doing the complaining.
I've noticed that. A complaint is really, you have a goal in mind. You really are trying to ameliorate a situation, whereas whining and venting is just blowing off steam, and we don't really want a solution. We don't want to make things better.
That's correct. And actually, the irony about the blowing off steam theory of whining and venting is that the research tells us that when we whine and vent, we're actually getting ourselves more upset.
Yes, that is true.
So we're not blowing off much steam, we're creating it.
Yeah, I remember a few years ago, I was having an ongoing argument with somebody, and I talked to a friend of mine who is a psychologist, and she said, you know, don't let him vent, you thinking that that's going to make things better, because venting is just stimulating. It doesn't in any way can make you feel better. So that's kind of good advice to us. Don't vent. Like, we're told, express yourself. But sometimes expressing yourself is actually not a good idea.
Well, venting does have its uses, because sometimes we actually can't get a result, and venting does have some use. But the trick is to distinguish between times that we want to complain, that we have a dissatisfaction, that we actually can do something about, and the ones that we should let go and maybe vent about once and then really try and turn the page and move on.
Mm-hmm. Todd, are you with us in Yonkers?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. Not too much to complain about.
Well, okay. Now, we've been told, Guy has explained to us the difference between complaining and griping or venting. So now I'm turning to you for some help. In how does one complain constructively? What are your tips?
Well, there are a lot of tips, and I agree with the whole notion of venting versus complaining. But increasingly, a lot of people do vent simply because they feel helpless. You know, there was an interesting study by Arizona State University said that 61% of Americans said that they would not complain about a product or a service because they felt it just wasn't worthwhile. And again, you're, you know, whistling into the dark on some level. And one of the big problems that we see is that, you know, more and more you've got airlines that are burying their phone numbers. Cable companies are sidestepping your calls. Retailers are steering you to online FAQs. And it's really about saving money, theirs, not yours. And, you know, although people hear that recorded message that insists, you know, your call is very important to us, many companies are really just driving a wedge between themselves and their patrons through, you know, poor use of technology and an inadequate training of staff. So it's, again, this feeling of helplessness. When we at Consumer Reports developed what we call our gripometer, and that was where we do this nationwide, you know, representative survey to find out kind of irritants in various parts of our life that drive us nuts, if you will. And, you know, the biggest three gripes, I'll tell you, was the inability to get a human on the phone, a rude salesperson, or these arcane phone menus, you know, that require multiple steps in order to get to a maybe. And these are the frustrations that people are having to deal with more and more, and develop a strategy where you're, I think more so than in the past, running up against into more brick walls.
Right.
So that's, I guess, the long way around. As my old algebra teacher said, you're going around the block just to get next door. But it's kind of important to make, you know, to explain the backdrop as to why there's so much frustration, why we hear so much venting at Consumer Reports, and why there's such a feeling of helplessness. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that you can't get satisfaction or enact strategies that will help you get to yes, or at least to a strong maybe. And, you know, first, one of the things we suggest to people is that when possible, make your pitch in person. You know, it might not be a favorite way to resolve a problem, but let's face it, it's effective. Because on the phone, think about this, we only use about half of our communication tools that we use in person. You know, we're missing the subtleties that break down barriers, like a smile, you know, a tone of voice. You know, the opportunity for things to go awry really increases when you're not face-to-face with people. So that's one effective tool. There's, you know, we talk about the discomfort and displeasure people have with automated phone menus. Well, there are actually services today that enable you to kind of bypass those menus. I don't know if you've ever tried this or heard about these services, dialahuman.com, gethuman.com. These are actually websites that list customer service numbers and tell people how to bypass those automated prompts to reach a real person.
Wow.
It's kind of neat. There's another one called Lucy Phone. Have you ever heard of that one?
No.
That one's neat, real nifty, too, because it lets you actually avoid long waits on hold. You can enter a company's number, and the service will actually call you back when a live representative is there on the line to field your question. I mean, that's just a couple of things. I can go on forever, but those are just two things right off the top of my head. I can give you plenty more.
I'm Andy Borowitz, and I'm in today for Leonard Lopate and WNYC and WNYC.org. And for our Please Explain segment this week, I'm talking to Todd Marks, Senior Projects Editor at Consumer Reports, and Guy Winch, Psychology Today blogger and author of The Squeaky Wheel. We are talking about the fine art of complaining, and we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can also leave a question for us on our show page at WNYC.org, or write to us on Facebook or at Leonard Lopate on Twitter. And actually, I think Anne from Manhattan has an idea of how to use humor in complaints. Let's see if we can get Anne on. Anne, are you with us?
Yes. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I think you're fabulous. So glad you're doing the show.
Oh, thank you.
Before I get to the humor aspect, in response to what the gentleman was just saying, sometimes when dealing with a testy phone major corporation operator, to say, now I know it's not you. I'm blaming the corporation that you work for. I'm sorry you work there. Blah 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 blah. But in general, I feel that adding some humor to any difficult situation, sometimes even saying something so over the top and outrageous, can do wonders. Just to be slightly over dramatic, or just say something totally whacked out, and you know, like maybe if I've been on hold so long, I'll just say, "What took you so long?" You know, and just to, you know, and then you know, laugh or just say, "Just kidding," or you know, there's so many little tactics you can take and subtleties and. You know, I just think that really helps.
So that's worked for you. That's been effective.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what else I'd like to do sometimes? I actually, when I am being handled effectively by a customer service representative, I tell them that they've done a good job. Because they almost never hear that, right?
Same thing.
Yeah. I find, you know, competence is so rare that I find it should be rewarded in all of its rare occurrences. I always do that.
If I was hiring, I would take you immediately.
Yeah, it's great. Well, Anne, thanks so much for calling.
Have a great day.
You too. So that's an interesting take. Of course, sense of humor can be tricky, right, because sometimes something is lost in translation, especially if you're literally speaking to somebody in Bangalore who may not get the fine sort of shadings of your American sense of humor. So it's, humor could be tricky, right?
Humor is actually really tricky to use because we often misjudge how something will be received. We tend to judge humor by whether we think it's funny,
yes,
not by whether the
that.
Audience will, right. will think it's funny. But actually, she raised two really, really good points. And one of them is that we tend to approach these calls to customer service once we're quite annoyed already. Mm-hmm. And so we are annoyed. One of the best things to do is what Anne suggested and say, I'm annoyed already, but not at you, mm-hmm. at the owner of the company, the manufacturer, what have you, because it's very important to remember that the person who's answering the phone, in fact, is a low-salaried employee who had nothing to do with the problem that was created, mm-hmm. and they have minimal training, and they have to follow these screens.
Right.
And so if you use something that's too whacked out in terms of your humor, which is not going to be on their screen, they might get a little confused,
right.
and be less able to help you. But
right.
to actually recognize that those are human beings just trying to do a job with minimal training, and to acknowledge, I'm not annoyed at you, so please forgive me, I'm annoyed at the situation, would actually be a great way to start.
Todd, where do you weigh in on this, on the use of humor?
Absolutely. I mean, you should never take things personally. Yours might be just one of 100 requests a rep handles in a day, and that person may get frazzled. They have bad times too. You know, getting mad won't help, and like you talk about humor, it's good, but remember you're sitting there and stewing, and then humor sometimes can degenerate into sarcasm and all kinds of nasty things that don't help your cause, but empathy is a wonderful thing. I remember a story I had written about in terms of service where someone was at a Best Buy store and they were waiting at the customer service desk for their turn. And the person in front of them had just gone on a diatribe, a complete tirade, eviscerating the customer service person over something. And the person who came up next basically empathized greatly with what that person had to handle and deal with, and it's a real tough job you have. I wouldn't want to be in your shoes, but you handled it so well. I really admire it. And that person got what they wanted in a no muss, no fuss way because, again, they empathized. That's a big part of it. And praise, as we mentioned, it was discussed before, thanking a company for a good outcome, especially if you've griped publicly, you don't want to be branded a whiner. And if you can criticize, you can certainly give praise. Absolutely.
Now, this is an interesting comment from Allison in New Jersey, who left a comment on our show page. She said, as a high school teacher, I found parents are quick to complain when their students haven't earned a high enough grade. And she said, instead of finding out what the student could do to improve, the focus becomes everything they believe the teacher did wrong. Are our priorities about whom to blame off and off? That actually sounds like sometimes parents are complaining in the hopes of perhaps getting a better grade for their kid. I don't know if that's a complaint that's leading to a change in the student's behavior. I mean, does that Do those kind of complaints sound suspiciously more like venting and whining than actual complaints? Or
I would actually label that manipulation.
Truly, manipulation.
Because, I mean, if you're trying to educate your child and discuss with your child why their grade wasn't high enough and what they might be able to do in terms of effort to improve it. But actually complaining to the teacher, I don't know, does much to educate the child.
Mm-hmm. Well, we should actually do another Please Explain just on manipulation, because that can be very useful too, I think. But that's okay. That's an interesting issue. Like, do you actually work on solving the problem at the source of the problem rather than, you know, after the fact complaining about the result?
But that's, you know, when you talk about just the whole, whether it's manipulation or anything else, or just bullying, when you have the in-school situation where a parent, you know, is complaining to a teacher about why my kid get this grade. I mean, that's we've seen, these are generational shifts. I mean, when I was growing up, the teacher was always presumed to be correct.
Right.
And what did you do to get yourself in hot water? And so I think we've seen a little bit of a change over in the way in terms of personal responsibility.
Right. Now, Guy, in your book, The Squeaky Wheel, you talk about something called the complaint sandwich.
Yes.
What is that? That's a catchy term. What is that exactly?
It's delicious, really. It's the idea is that if you want to formulate a complaint in a way that gets by our psychological defenses, because we are built and wired in such a way that when we hear a complaint, even if it's our job to hear complaints, we're going to get defensive. You
right.
know, this is probably from our evolutionary past. I think questions like, say, are you wearing my mammoth pelt, were never really followed up by a discussion, but rather a spear between the ribs. So we tend to get defensive. And one of the things you need to do then is to open with a positive statement, which I call the ear opener, and that's its function, to open the ears of the person who's receiving the complaint so they can actually listen to the meat of the sandwich to follow, which is the actual complaint. And the meat of the sandwich should be lean. It should be a simple incident, not marinated in sarcasm or anger. For example, if your spouse is doing something to annoy you for the 100th time, you don't need a recap of all the 99 efforts that preceded it. You just need to say, this happened yesterday, I was upset about it. So you need to keep it simple. And then you need to close with another positive statement, the second slice of bread in the sandwich, because that encourages the listener to and motivates them to actually try and resolve the issue, because you're trying to communicate, and if you can do this to resolve it, things will be fine between us. I'll continue being a good customer or a good spouse or a good friend, what have you. So it's important to keep the actual complaint simple and to surround it by positive statements.
Well, that was a very elaborate sandwich metaphor, but I thought it completely made sense.
So it was
delicious. I completely bought it. I'm speaking with Todd Marks, Senior Projects Editor at Consumer Reports, and with Guy Winch, author of The Squeaky Wheel, for today's Please Explain Look at Complaining. We're also taking your calls at 212-433-9692. We'll have more after the break. I'm Andy Borowitz. I'm in today for Leonard Lopate, and I'm talking to Todd Marks, Senior Projects Editor, Consumer Reports, and Guy Winch, the author of The Squeaky Wheel. We're talking all about complaining, the fine art of complaining, and we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692 if you have questions or observations about successful complaining. Let's talk to, is it Kat in Astoria? Let's see.
Yes.
Hi, Kat. How are you?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just finished up an 8-year run as chief concierge in several of New York City's luxury hotels. So I've become an expert at dealing with high-end complaints, low-end complaints, and everything in between. One of your guests mentioned motivation as a factor of getting what you want, and that's absolutely true. When a guest is at my desk and is complaining that the water was too hot or too cold, or there's something in the drain, or there's something wrong with the room, or they don't like the restaurant where I sent them last night, it is in my best interest to solve the problem for them. And when the guest doesn't yell at me or demean me or say I made a bad choice in that way, it's better for me to be motivated by them to come up with a quick solution, solve the problem, convey it to the rest of the staff in the hotel, and probably be recognized for my efforts because I solved something. I took the guest problem into my own hands, and I can represent myself as the problem solver to both the guest and the company, and everybody wins in the end, because most things can be solved with just a little bit of that squeaky wheel.
So did you find that people, any of your guests, used the complaint sandwich? Did they start with something nice and then move on to their complaint, or did people just come in with the meat and say, you know, I hate what you did?
I mean, I would say the meat is 90% of it, but people who are either well-traveled or just have a decent perspective, because everybody makes mistakes and problems can happen with your reservation, with your banking, whatever. You have to take a deep breath, because someone on the other end does want to help you. They do want to solve your problem. They do want to keep you as a customer. And with a little bit of dialogue and the right kind of information, you don't have to tell a long, rambling story about what happened. Get to the heart of it, and people are happy to help you. Let them do it.
Did your 8 years of service give you a lot of empathy for other people in the customer service field? I mean, are you nicer
absolutely.
To the Verizon person?
I'm a great tipper. I'm very patient with credit card companies. I'm careful with people. If I'm at one side of the desk and someone's on the other side, I know what it's like to be in their position, and if I can see that they're struggling, I can help them along. I probably know by this point what are the procedures to elevate how to solve the problem, and how fast can it get done? That's another really important thing. Like, if this is a problem that can be solved in 15 minutes or less, then use your resources to get it solved that way.
Well, thank you very much, Kat, and good luck to what are you doing now after 8 years of being a hotel concierge?
That's a very good question. I'm still trying to figure it out.
I see. Well, good luck with that. Thanks for calling.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So, we heard it from, that's confirmation of your theory, Guy, which is that the nicer approach, the more complimentary and empathic approach got more results than just the nasty approach.
Correct. I mean, we do have the temptation to just vent, yell, or be sarcastic. But actually, if we want to be effective, if we want to get a result, then we should be smart about it, not just right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way to be smart.
Well, now, Charles, on our show page, this is just shows that there's a whole variety of opinions about this topic, says, what about the bullying tactic? Sometimes I feel like the only way to get some service reps to take me seriously is to pretend I'm really furious even when I'm not. Do either of you two experts promote? I like to. Bullying is kind of a loaded term these days. We'll say like nasty or angry approach. It sounds like you are not proponents of that.
I'm actually. I get a lot of emails from people who work in the customer service industry, who work at call centers, telling me how much they are bullied. It is mm-hmm. the word they used.
Like, I'll have you fired and things like that.
Oh, the research shows that the average person in a call center gets 10 hostile calls a day on average, and they're threatened, demeaned, yelled at. And one person wrote recently about suicides in call centers. Mm. I mean, it's a huge problem. That's why they have such turnover. And the problem is that we treat customer service reps so poorly that they don't stay in the job very long. Mm-hmm. And because they don't stay in the job, the companies don't want to invest in training them. So they train them less, which makes them less competent, which makes us more furious, which makes them more likely to leave. And there is the cycle.
But Todd, you mentioned that, you know, when we get on the phone to call customer service, we're sent through this ridiculous phone tree, and we're working on our last nerve by the time we actually get on the phone with a human being. So aren't the companies, in a sense, creating a more hostile environment for their employees, because they're the ones who've worked us up by giving us the runaround?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of truth on both sides. I mean, you have to remember a few things. It's funny, you know, and there was this rage study done by Arizona State University that showed that 70% of people, when they call to complain about something, all they wanted was a thank you for their business or an apology. And very few of them actually got either. So from the customer service end, people, the consumer wants to be acknowledged that they have a problem, that it's understood. I think all too often we hear a lot of dead air on the other side. But conversely, like you said, if you're the bull in a china shop, chances are you're not going to get to what you want, because very few of us have the gravitas to be able to kind of bull our way to yes. I mean, sure, it can happen sometime, but it eventually runs its course and you get yourself in hot water. But like I said, when you don't take things personally, when you keep a well-documented record, note when you called, the name and the location of everyone you spoke with, how many times you were put on hold, and the responses you received. That way, if you need to follow up, you can say, I spoke to, you know, John Smith in your Chicago office at 1220, and after 30 minutes, he said he never heard of anyone who had a problem like mine. Or then you take it to the next level. If you get the runaround, and again, you're doing this meticulously, if you get the runaround, you tell the agent, hey, listen, I'd like to escalate the status of my complaint. That's one of those dirty words that they don't like in customer service, because too many calls that are bumped up to a supervisor can result in disciplinary action against the initial customer service representative. They don't want to have too many of those marks on their record. So that's one effective tool. Then you can always contact the CEO's office. I know it's like, you know, who wants to battle City Hall, or does it affect? Well, a lot of times when you're dealing with companies, especially those that put a premium on customer service, you know, the CEO's office doesn't like getting calls, you know, but when a top executive or their assistant hears from an unhappy customer, you know, whether you write to them or call, they often make sure that that persistent person receives a response. And talk about being persistent, you know, you can speak loudly without being rude, and often you can repeat your story. You know, one of the great things about the age we live in from a complaint standpoint is social media. Social networking sites have really become the go-to place to get your complaints heard. You know, companies, you know, people go to Facebook, but Twitter is really the go-to site, and there are many, many major companies, and even smaller ones, actually have people whose job it is to monitor references to the company name and what's being said about them. And they will try, in many instances, to intercede before a complaint goes viral. Because I think I had heard somewhere recently that the average the person who's been aggrieved, who has a complaint, will on average tell between 18 and 20 people of their experience, far more than those who tell about a positive experience. And companies don't want this, again, to go viral and to get a bad name. So there are ways you can effectively be assertive. We won't say aggressive. We say you can be assertive by documenting and by taking it step by step and being heard.
I'm Andy Borowitz. I'm in today for Leonard Lopate. I'm WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm talking to Todd Marks, the Senior Projects Editor at Consumer Reports, and Guy Winch, the author of The Squeaky Wheel, about the fine art of complaining. Well, now, you mentioned, Todd, social media and Twitter. I have a little bit of a concern that the anonymity of using social media and just flaming some company on their Facebook page or on Twitter has kind of a negative effect on our overall discourse, that people, rather than thinking, what is my specific complaint? How do I really want to get a resolution? They're really just after a certain point, just interested in defaming somebody. They want to defame someone using their Yelp page or Facebook page. And isn't that kind of a problem for there's such a complaint about our low level of service in our country, but it doesn't make things better if people are just anonymously defaming.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, but you like any time you have power, you must use it for peaceful purposes. But that's
no one on the internet does that.
Yeah, well, that's the problem again of the age we live in. Look, people can comment on everything now. When we didn't have that ability years ago, or even a short time ago, people comment. You know, you go to read your favorite newspaper online. There's a comment section, and you read about horrific situations families go through, or terrible, terrible situations or tragedies, and people are commenting on this as though it's spectator sport, and they know the inside story, and it's terrible. It really desensitizes you to feeling other people. But again, it can be a social media can be a power. powerful tool if you act responsibly, but that's the way it is with everything. You need to have personal discipline, self-control, and you need to be above board. But yes, you're right. It can be abused in a world of anonymity, and especially if you're just looking to flame. But we're trying to get results.
Right. Now, are there any words that you find, both of you guys, that you find helpful in registering a complaint? One word that I often use that actually really works well is I will say unacceptable. I will say such and such was done and this is unacceptable. And sometimes that really does, it can be delivered calmly. I don't have to deliver it in a bullying way, but it does kind of get their attention because it's if I'm actually not accepting the situation, that means that they have to do something to bring me around. Does that sound like a good one, or has that just worked for me?
That's a good word. The other word I would use, and it's going to sound a little redundant, but I would use the word help. In other words, I would actually say, I need your help.
Mm-hmm.
Because any complaint is, in essence, a request for assistance. If it weren't, we would be taking care of it ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So I would actually say that I need your help. And let me just comment on something you said a moment ago, Andy. You said, you know, you have to think about what you want, what would resolve the issue for you. And I'll tell you that when people ask me about or tell me stories about their complaining episodes, and I said to them, well, what did you want to achieve by that complaint? The answer I get most frequently is, in other words, they hadn't thought through what they wanted to achieve. They just wanted to start expressing the complaint without actually knowing what would resolve it for them. And if you don't know what would resolve it for you, then the person on the other end of the phone or your spouse or your friend can't know either.
Well, there's another term from psychiatry that I love, which is the help-rejecting complainer, which is somebody who just really wants to complain. Actually, if they get help, they don't want it. They just really want to complain.
And many companies have blacklists of clients and customers that call so frequently with complaints that they're actually put on a blacklist where they are bounced around the system more often because really they're help-rejecting complainers. They're just calling they're lonely, they want to speak to someone or just to harass the company. So that is a phenomenon that exists, unfortunately.
Yeah, and another helpful tip is like to ask open-ended questions. Don't ask a question that can be answered with a simple yes or more likely no. You say, "How can you help me? How can we make this happen? Here's my situation. Here's what I've gone through. How can we resolve this?" And give them the opportunity to speak. And there's nothing wrong with a pause, especially after you've made your point. Sometimes pause from you after you've stated your point can make the other person, I don't want to say uncomfortable, but it can make them uncomfortable and give them a little pause saying, I've got to respond in some manner that, you know, give them time to think, and just process and then respond to you. But if you ask an open-ended question, it's harder just to simply say no.
Have either of you guys had an experience where, despite the fact that you're complaining experts, your complaints have been ignored by the powers that be? Have you had any unsuccessful complaining that you can tell me about?
I've had episodes. I write about one in the book where I was on the phone for an extremely long time, and most of it was trying to get my name right. And my name is actually rather simple. It's Guy Winch. It's one syllable each. And it ended where the person said, "Is it Di Wench?" And I said, "Well, if you're channeling Jack the Ripper, maybe." And they said, "I'm sorry for that, Mr. Wench." And it just wasn't going anywhere. So no, that didn't work.
What about you, Todd? Have you had a bad...
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, I just remember in baseball, if you're batting 300, that's you get a hit every, third time at bat. That's pretty good. With complaining, it's, again, the nature of it. What are you trying to accomplish? Some problems are much easier to resolve than others. But, yes, there have been many times when I've had a door closed in my face. But I persist until the point where it doesn't help. But usually, again, with a lot of practice, it works out.
Oh, you know what, guys? My producer is now complaining that I've got to stop talking with you. So thanks for being here. I've been speaking with Todd Marks, Senior Projects Editor, Consumer Reports, and Guy Winch, not Di Wench, author of The Squeaky Wheel. For today's Please Explain Look at the Art of Complaining, Todd and Guy, it's been such a pleasure, and thank you so much for being on today's show.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
On Monday's show, Mark Leibovich discusses Washington, D.C.'s media industrial complex. Then, Jeff Garlin from Curb Your Enthusiasm talks about directing and starring in the new film, Dealing with Idiots. Also, a look at efforts to protect the Jersey Shore from the next superstorm. Plus, Brett Martin on the creative television revolution of the late 90s and 2000s, and the writers behind it. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. Debbie Daughtry was at the audio controls. We had help today from Helen Rauner and Keita Sue and contributing producer Jessica Miller. I'm Andy Borowitz in for Leonard Lopate. Thanks so much for listening and have a great weekend.